Hi, this is Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, telling you to stay tuned to WNJC 1360 AM for Thursday in the Doghouse, coming right up.
Mama was a mutt, Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything that I use. One day I'm walking down my block.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer.
And I'm your host, Karen Fazio, the Dog Super Nanny.
Thursday in the Doghouse comes to you live every Thursday morning from 10 to 10:30 right here on WNJC 1360 AM. Both Karen and I are professional dog trainers and behavior consultants in New Jersey. Every day we're out meeting dogs and their pet parents. We work with many dogs that have developed serious behavioral issues like fearfulness, separation anxiety, dog-on-human, and dog-on-dog aggression, and lots of other issues. Karen and I host this radio show in the hopes that we'll help our listeners who live with dogs to understand them better. We also interview other experts in this field, such as veterinarians, authors, and other trainers from around the United States and even Europe. Our guest this morning is Melissa Berryman. Melissa has a very interesting career. She was an animal control officer in Massachusetts from 1993 to 1998. She's currently a national dog bite consultant who works with rescue groups, dog owners, and bite victims. She's also designed and teaches a safety and liability class for dog owners and has written a book called People Training for Good Dogs. Melissa has an undergraduate degree in animal science, pre-veterinary medicine, and a master's degree in public administration. We're going to talk to Melissa in just a moment. But first, Karen Fazio would like to tell you what services she offers in Keyport, New Jersey, and its surrounding towns.
Are you the owner of a fearful or aggressive dog and don't know where to turn? Have you called other trainers and they've turned you down because they don't want to deal with an aggression case? Then My Best Friend Dog Training and its special service, the Dog Super Nanny, is maybe just what you're looking for. We do in-home private consultations. We're located in Keyport, New Jersey, and we do travel. Our phone number is 732-533-9376, and our website is mybestfrienddogschool.com. We are positive-based trainers and don't use physical punishment or fear as a way to motivate your dog. We use games and fun as a way to do that, and we also help you during the whole process. So give us a call. We're here for you. 732-533-9376.
Welcome back to Thursday in the Doghouse. Good morning, Melissa. Thank you so much for joining us in the Doghouse today.
I really appreciate you having me on today.
Well, I think we're going to have a very interesting discussion today, and I'm looking forward to learning more about what you do. I'm fascinated that you're a dog bite consultant. What does that job entail?
Well, about over 10 years ago, there really wasn't anybody that was seeing the other side in the whole picture, because we tend to generalize with dog bite injuries,
right,
and we speak about them and think about injuries in terms of dogs doing stuff in a vacuum. So when I was investigating dog bite injuries, the person that was bitten, we thought they did nothing to incur the bite and that it was always unprovoked. And so the blame was always on the dog owner and the dog, and usually people were set up by society to make these mistakes. So I started an online business where I was helping people to understand why their dogs had bitten and to understand why they had been bitten, to empower people to solve the problem and not just blame the dog.
Okay. And so what have you come up with? What is it that do people create the situations most of the time that causes dogs to bite?
Yeah, I just want to jump in real quick. Can I jump in?
Yeah.
You ought to also just said that, you know, they're set up by society to make these mistakes. I think that, you know, correlates with Rini's statement, so maybe you can elaborate a little bit more on that for our audience.
Sure. You know, when people are looking for a dog, they usually select for aesthetics, and the breeders tend to write these description of dogs like you can actually go select behavior independent of what you do. And it's kind of like going to a car dealership and saying, I'd like to have the car that doesn't crash. So there's a huge disconnect, and I really found, too, that I only started teaching by default. That's not really what my main goal was. I was actually teaching because trainers didn't want to deal with the dogs that were coming to the shelter and I was picking up off the street. They wanted me to, you know, have people euthanize the dog and then start over with another dog, or they didn't want to deal with the shelter dogs. So I started filling in the gap, because as an animal officer, if you don't help somebody, you're going to end up picking up the pieces later on anyway. So what I found is that people just had no idea of what their role was, because we call it dog training, and I'll tell you why. With horses, and I have a background with horses as well, if you're going to learn to ride, you go call a riding instructor. You don't call a horse trainer. We separate the two entities, the learning how to do the skill and then the training of the animal. But with dogs, we don't. And so we have dog training, dog obedience. So people disconnect that they're actually learning a skill. And so when I teach, I actually teach everybody in the family, and I have schooling dogs, just like you would have schooling horses, so that people can gain the skills and abilities and then work with their dog, who actually expects them to have a level of proficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So that disconnect starts the whole ball rolling of there's a disconnect in society is how we present things and how people respond and the actions they take.
What about, we had a situation happen this week. It's been on the news, and there's been videos for people to watch. It was a horrific incident in Colorado where a TV anchor was bitten by a dog that had already been in the news. Just for a little bit background, the dog's breed is a Dogo Argentino, which is a guardian breed who was bred to protect farms and farm animals. And so he had gotten lost or abandoned on the ice. After chasing away a coyote, and so he was rescued, and the next day, because they felt that the dog was, I suppose, a hero of sorts, they brought the dog into a TV station, and this lovely woman was interviewing the owners, and she just got so caught up in the moment, and, you know, she did something completely inappropriate for a dog that she'd never met before, who had already been under tremendous stress from the day before and now was in a totally unfamiliar environment. And she humanized that dog by going to him and cupping his face with her hands and attempting to kiss him. Can you explain to our visitor, our listeners, Melissa, how that dog must have been thinking? I mean, can you explain that bite?
Sure, this is a classic. For one thing, the dog is an expensive dog, so I can tell you about the dog owner, that they spent a lot of money on the dog. I can't tell you that they did any training or handling instruction, but what I saw is the classic disconnect with our ability to understand what fight or flight is.
Mm-hmm.
And fight or flight is a protective response that if you feel you're in imminent danger, a part of your brain that you're not conscious of will actually tell you to either retreat or to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
And our fight or flight has been kind of conditioned for a while, so that we've turned it down to almost turn it off. So if you get into a crowded elevator with a bunch of strangers,
right,
you're not going to do fight or flight. You just kind of pretend you're by yourself. So that's how we kind of minimize conflict with strangers. We mind our own business.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put a whole bunch of dogs that didn't know each other into this crowded elevator or crowded space, you wouldn't expect them to just mind their own business.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the instruction is to work with owners being able to handle their dog's fight or flight response. And each dog has a different, and each person has a different set point for a trigger for fight or flight. The dogs that are really severely have this low set point, they react to a lot of stuff. You know, a garbage can, oh my God, I'm really afraid of that, I'm afraid of that. A lot of times we interpret that as the dog has been abused, but oftentimes it's just a low set point for fight or flight. So if you look at this situation, the dog's in a studio, so yes, different people, different environment. It's sitting in front of its owner who's on a couch. So the dog's buttressed to the couch.
Mm-hmm.
And then the dog's owner is holding the collar really tight.
Yeah, I saw
so
that.
So that's a potential fight situation, mm-hmm, because there's no way that dog can flee. And again, we're talking about primitive brain. We're not talking about analytical brain.
Mm-hmm.
And dogs have everything. We have everything in the dog's brain plus some more stuff. But for the dog, they're really reacting automatically, and we do too. I do a little experiment with my clients so that they can see that their fight or flight response still works.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the anchor is beside the dog, and you can see that the dog's licking her hand. Things seem to be okay until she holds it underneath the chin and goes forward into the dog's nose. Soon as she does that, triggered the fight or flight response.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a bullet flying out of a gun. Mm-hmm. He went bam. Now, did he think about that? No, it's just a protective response. And I've been bitten in the face before, and I know better. It certainly wasn't because I was kissing a dog, but I was trying to pill a dog that had a brachiocephalic face, which is Pekingese. They have no nose. So I was trying to get the dog to swallow the pill, and I got too close to the face. And,
right.
And I know better.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it was fight or flight. So as soon as it was over, the dog was fine. You know,
mm-hmm,
everything's good, and I'm sure this dog is fine too.
Mm-hmm.
But in society, we're going to interpret that as the dog's evil and vicious.
Mm-hmm.
And shouldn't have done that.
Right.
Can I jump in here? You know, in Chapter 3, in Canine University, you go in to describe, you know, appropriate behavior and that dogs bite, and you talk about the dangers of hugging and things like that. But, if you really step back and take a look at it, how weird is that woman's behavior? I mean, we wouldn't
do that to any person. People don't know this.
No, we don't go up to strange kids or babies and just start kissing them and putting our face close by. For some reason, this is something we do with dogs.
We expect too much. We expect them to be human.
Humans don't do this.
I know.
Here's one of the things that happens with dogs, and I go back to horses again. If you get bucked off a horse, everybody tells you to get back on.
Mm-hmm.
So that means your skills and abilities need improvement. But with dogs, what you find is that if there's a problem with the dog, especially if the dog bites, the message in society is to get rid of the dog.
Right.
So we actually have been eliminating a large portion of the positions with dogs. And I use generals and privates as far as them being group animals. They have to kind of do stuff together, so they organize their groups just like we do. We have a hierarchical society as well. In the wild, wolves are in family groups, but still the parents are kind of in control of the young. And so what happens is that most people, because they're not proving their skills and abilities, and that's why we have jobs to help these people, they're actually at a beginner, advanced beginner maybe level of ability. And the dogs that are easy to deal with are the private ones. Those have the roles. That type of dog doesn't have any power, has to do whatever, can't wait to please somebody. And we eliminate the higher-ranking dogs and the flight-type dogs as dogs with a low set point for fight or flight. And so what has come to embody our vision of what dogs are the low-ranking dogs. You can do anything to them. They're happy-go-lucky. They can't wait for anybody to interact with them. And so we've forgotten that you can't go to war with a whole bunch of privates. There are different pack positions, and people take all these liberties. And I use the term unconscious incompetence. You don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only until after it happens where somebody maybe explains it to you that you go, oh, my God, I shouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Melissa, would you expect this particular dog, the Adogo Argentino, to have had good bite inhibition at Would you expect, well, obviously this dog doesn't have good bite inhibition because he totally ruined this woman's face. There's word there that it may not be, you know, repairable, where she's ever going to resemble what she looked like before. But a breed that is bred to, as a guardian breed like this, would another Dogo Argentino bitten not quite as hard, or is this something that would be common to the breed? Do you have any idea?
Sure. I have two contexts for dog behavior, and one context is within their group. So if you have a relationship with that animal, they're going to actually look to interact with you in terms of whether you're above them in status or below them in status. Mm. If you're above them in status, then you can ask of them a lot of stuff, and they'll do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if they think they're above you in status and you do the same, then they'll see it as insubordination, just like the private, if the private tries to boss around the general. So if I see it instead of bite inhibition, it all depends on what your status is in relationship to the dog, in the dog's mind. So that means that if I'm, which I don't do, if I grab a dog by the collar an example that I do. There's a dog in the yard. It's lying in the yard. I go up to it, and I walk right to it. It jumps out of my way and leaves, okay, and then it goes back and lies down.
Mm-hmm.
Then another dog comes towards it, and it does not outrank that dog. Well, instead of jumping up and leaving, he turns around and tells that other dog to knock it off and leave him alone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happens within families where I can hug my dog and it submits to it. It doesn't mean I love you. It's more of a I'm in charge of you type of signal to them.
Mm-hmm.
But if then a child who is below the dog in status in the dog's eyes goes and hugs the dog, then the dog's going to turn around. And if the child does not respond appropriately to stop it, the dog ends up biting the child in the face.
But
so that's one thing. And then outside the group, it is about a lot of fight or flight. And mm-hmm. everybody has different set points. So does that mean that every dog of this breed is going to have the set point for fight or flight for strangers? No. So
well,
always in context and in relation.
All right, so you're separating the relationship between the humans and the dog, or the dog and the dog, versus the dog having the ability to inhibit the pressure he's using to bite. I mean,
it,
I teach.
It's all dependent on who he's biting, especially within the group.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends because. If I'm above this dog in status, the dog won't dare try to bite me.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
But, yeah, but how would... this is where I have an issue with this hierarchical
mm-hmm.
theory. how would he determine the news reporter's status in such a short period of time? I mean,
okay, I don't think that's about hierarchy. That's about fight or flight. And, again, it's provoking mm-hmm. that primitive part of the brain.
Right.
So... you know, he would not have bitten her had she not gotten in his face.
Right.
Well, his
okay?
body language.
And if you can see it, it's just bam and get away. Now, President Bush's dog Barney bit
right.
a reporter.
Right.
And that was a few years ago. So yeah. the reporter asked the handler, can I pat the dog? And the handler says yes. And instead of the dog being asked by the reporter, can I pat you? And I ask dogs if I can pat them by tapping my leg. And that is like a wagging tail, and the dog will either come on over and say, sure, pat me, or it'll stay away. He reaches down to the dog. Well, the dog's in fight or flight, and he can't flee, so he goes, bam, bites mm-hmm. the guy in the hand, and then retreats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there was a lot of tongue flicking right before that bite, too. I watched that video in slow-mo.
Are you talking about the Dogo, or are you talking about Barney?
No, the President Bush's dog.
Yeah, but there was a lot of lots and lots of tongue flicking and swallowing, hard swallowing. That
mm-hmm.
the Dogo was looking away. He did everything
yeah.
he possibly could to use his body language to show this woman, hey, I'm not comfortable.
Hey, he was being held really tightly and pressed.
Oh, it was awful.
So
yep.
It was a bad situation.
Yeah, it was.
And it's about the owner doesn't know any better, and neither did the reporter.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you are a dog bite consultant. Now, would somebody contact you to investigate this situation? Would they contact you to explain what happened about this situation?
Yes, it all depends on who's contacting me. I did reach out to the reporter just to let her know about fight or flight because
okay.
It is, again, something that we don't look at.
Right.
Every time you put a dog on a leash and you hold it tight, it's in fight or flight.
Right.
When they're in a car, they're in fight or flight. When they're in your house, they're in fight or flight because they can't escape.
Mm-hmm.
So if she had reached out to me to say, gee, what happened there, I would explain, you know, about the fight or flight and what she could have done so that it didn't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the dog owner, I would also explain about fight or flight, and then we'd talk about what types of things that they could do so that this wouldn't happen again.
Okay.
Well, you teach a liability and safety class for dog owners. What do you exactly teach in the class?
Everything that's in the book. I'm really teaching about making sure that people understand the differences between our behavior and how it reflects onto the dogs. And I'm talking about definitely some common dog bite injuries where people don't have any idea that it's going to happen until it happens and then they're getting sued. So all my experience that way. And then I'm teaching about the two contexts, the within the group behavior and outside the group behavior. We really think that we can just take our dogs, and the dog will act the same way in every situation.
Oh, that's
with everybody.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we don't act that way.
Correct.
So, do we have time to take a break?
Yes, we do. We'll take a short break.
Okay.
And let me tell everybody what I do here in New Jersey as a professional dog trainer and behavior consultant, and we'll be back in just a moment. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age, and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Aaron, you want to bring us back?
Back to Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm Karen Fazio, the dog super nanny. And I'm here with Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. And today we have Melissa Berryman on the phone, and she's discussing her book, People Training for Good Dogs. Welcome back, Melissa.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Can I ask you a question? We have two questions, actually. Rini wanted to know a little bit some of the experience you had as an animal control officer. And my question was what are some of the reasons you believe that dogs bite humans? But why don't we target? Right? Isn't that what you wanted to ask, Rini?
No, I like the question about why do dogs bite humans. I mean,
let's do that.
Okay, again, within the group, they bite because, okay, so normally for dogs within their group, they can battle over a hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in the wild, there's not so many battles because they're usually parents and progeny, and anybody that didn't get along gets to leave, but in our groups they don't get to do that all often.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll have little battles over status, and then they will compete with each other over resources. So if I had a bunch of dogs and I threw a piece of meat in the middle of them, they're not going to cut it up in equal shares and pass it out.
That's right.
So resources are a bunch of things, and that includes food, toys, your attention is a big one.
Yes, it is.
And places where they might be sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on the status dictates whether there's going to be a battle. And the other little fun thing about dogs is that because they're predators, they're looking to take advantage so that if you're not paying attention, you're giving them an opportunity.
And they are opportunists.
Okay. Yes, yes, definitely. So if your attention somewhere else, so I have a bunch of dogs in a daycare program, right?
Right.
And if I go out the door to, and they're all crowded at the fence, as I'm coming towards them, one of, you know, they're all paying attention to me because I'm the resource,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's always one that'll turn and tag somebody or try to tag somebody.
Are you talking about redirecting?
They're programmed that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not as much of a, for me, it's, you know, it's one of the things that parts of their brain work so that they can survive out in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I agree.
When we put them in situations where they're really not meant to live in your house and drive in your car and
mm-hmm.
and walk by a whole bunch of folks and other animals and just pretend they don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So we're provoking some of these instinctual things that keep them you know, healthy and alive. And it's the same type of thing that if you're on the phone and your child starts bothering you because
mm-hmm.
you're not paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
For the child, if you're not paying 100% attention to the child, they're at risk. So that's why they're getting your attention.
Right.
So dogs are doing that as well. And so I find that people aren't really aware of that each person in the family is going to have a different relationship.
That is a good point, Melissa. And when I work with families, it seems that, especially with puppies, you know, puppies look a little differently to the adults, especially when they're going through the teething stage and the biting stage. And so the smaller the child, you know, I'm talking about maybe a 4 or 5 or 6 year old child, they seem to get bitten a lot more than the adults do. And I think that's just because of the position of where those children fit into the home. I wish we had a whole nother half hour to talk, but unfortunately we don't. We only have about 3 minutes, and maybe we can have you back again sometime.
Oh, I'd love to.
Yeah, I'd love for you to come back and we can talk more about this. But just very briefly, you mention in your book voice control. Can you just very briefly explain what happens when people use their voices in not so efficient manner? Do we have to scream at our dogs? What happens when people are just soft-spoken? Can they manage dogs too?
That's a great thing because the voice is totally underrated with people. And I see your voice, I try to mimic what the dogs do, and they have a low tone, and that's like a growl. And they also have high pitch, and the high pitch is, it sends off endorphins, so it's a bonding, it's a group strengthening type of tone for them.
Mm-hmm, right.
And if you look at it, your voice, your high pitch voice can actually do three things. It's very much an attractant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why if you go, yay, puppy, they get all excited and they come right over to you even though you didn't call them.
Right.
You can reassure dogs. So some, because they don't see so well, I use it to reassure everybody, make sure everything's all right and set
mm-hmm.
tones.
Mm-hmm.
And I also use it as a reward.
Right.
So instead of having a piece of food, I can just say, good, and it's almost just as good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The negative stuff is definitely like the growl. So I use the differences in tones, high and low.
Mm-hmm.
And so a great example is where people are using their voice inefficiently.
Mm-hmm.
If a dog jumps on somebody and they say, off.
Mm-hmm.
Off?
Right.
Well, that's a question.
Yeah.
And so when I teach, I have a yard full of dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm talking about behavior, the dogs are actually doing it. Because if a dog annoyed another dog and that dog outranked the dog that was annoying it,
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't say, Don't do that.
We've got to go, darling. I have somebody else waiting to do a 10:30 show. We'd love to have you back. Maybe we can talk more about voice control the next time.
Great.
Thank you so much for joining us in the doghouse, and I will have your information on our websites with the name of your book and where to get it. So thank you so much, and I hope everybody has a great week. Get out and walk your dog today. It's beautiful. Talk to you next week on Thursday in the Doghouse.
Thank you. Where you've been since 2 o'clock, I've been holding it in. Grab the leash, let's go chop chop. If I don't get out.